I would like, though, at the risk of self-indulgence, to end with a little epilogue here, a little eerie epilogue. I began with the eerie sound of the Aeolian harp. I want to end with an eerie synchronicity that recently happened to me involving Kubla Khan. So when I was researching this, I hadn't read Kubla Khan or any of these Coleridge poems in a few years, and so I was looking back into them. And I was researching, like, what is Purchas's Pilgrimage and things like this. And I found an article on the internet by a scholar named Adam Roberts. And on Substack, I will place the link to this article. And the scholar named Adam Roberts in this article, is discussing his speculation, and he is, unlike me, a scholar of Coleridge and of the Romantic period. And he's discussing in this article his speculation on what, if in fact Coleridge had completed Kubla Khan, what would it be about? Because Coleridge never said what the vision was that he didn't complete. And in fact, scholars have cast doubt on his story about the person from Porlock. They've said, for instance, Purchas's Pilgrimage at that time was a rare book and a very oversized folio volume that you wouldn't just either take with you or find in what he describes as a lonely farmhouse. So they think he kind of the preface is part of the poem and is a further variation on the theme of romantic inspiration, but he probably didn't, have this grand visionary dream that he was prevented from completing by the man from Porlock. He probably just had an opium vision and wrote as much as he could, and then creates this kind of myth to go with the myth that is the poem itself about creative inspiration. Bearing all that in mind, Adam Roberts, the scholar, nevertheless says, well, let's look at the poem. Let's look at some textual evidence, what's in the poem, to suggest what might happen next if it had continued. And then let's look at some contextual evidence. What was Coleridge reading that might have inspired him to tell a larger story? And he says the one thing in the poem that suggests a plot that will develop is when Kublai Khan, who was in fact the emperor of China in the Yuan dynasty, the first dynasty in China ruled by foreign rulers. It was the Mongol Empire, the empire that Genghis Khan had set up when the Mongols come out of Central Asia and go into China. They go east into China and conquer that, and they go west into Arabia and conquer much of the Muslim world, and then up into Russia and conquer much of that. So this is the major imperial force in the period we think of as the Middle Ages. So Kublai Khan's a real person, and Kublai Khan in the poem hears these voices prophesying war. So Adam Roberts says, okay, the poem's going to be about a war. So what war would Coleridge be interested in writing about? And Adam Roberts, being a true scholar of the period, says, in periodicals that we know for sure Coleridge was reading, there was a fashionable theory at the time that I think has been proved more or less false, but there was a fashionable theory of the, at the time that Kublai Khan had sent an army, or actually a navy, had sent a navy over the water east to conquer Japan, to complete, to keep on going with the Mongol conquests. And the theory that was discussed in these periodicals and magazines was the theory that this fleet was shipwrecked, and it wasn't shipwrecked in Japan. It was driven off course and was shipwrecked in the Americas. And what the Aztec Empire in Mexico was the recomposition of a Mongol empire by these shipwrecked Mongols. And so Coleridge theorizes Adam Roberts. The story Coleridge was going to tell in Kubla Khan, if it had been an epic poem, was the story of the fleet sent to conquer Japan, driven off course, driven to the Americas, and the foundation, the rise of the Aztec Empire out of the Mongol Empire in the New World. And what I find so richly poetic about that is it brings us full circle back to Coleridge's biography. First of all, Coleridge's original life plan was to found a commune on the east coast of the New World. And if he had written this epic poem, it would have been about the founding of an empire in the west of the New World. So that's beautifully poetic in and of itself. But there's, and this is pure self-indulgence, but this is also an eerie synchronicity to something that happened to me on Substack recently. You might be listening to this on Substack. And I had a little quarrel with a fellow Substacker. We were trying to recreate the golden age of the 2000s blogosphere when people would get into blog wars with each other. And so I got into a little quarrel with another prominent Substacker, a Substacker more prominent than I am, named Sam Chris, who's quite good. You should read his work. And we made up. We had a rapprochement. We're cool again. I don't think we had actually interacted before this. We had our contretemps. I can only speak of this in French. We had our contretemps. Then we had our rapprochement, and we're doing fine. But in the course of the querelle, I will continue to speak French. In the course of the querelle, what had happened was I wrote a little, I think, affectionate parody of Sam Chris's literary style, which is that Sam Chris often likes to begin, and I think this is actually quite wonderful, and it reminds me of Borges, and it reminds me of Guy Davenport, and it reminds me of other great essayists and storytellers like that. He often likes to begin with a kind of far-flung exotic anecdote that he eventually, and the thrill of his essays is often watching him bring that around to the relevance of our time. Kind of everything is connected. But I did do a gentle and affectionate parody of this, and the parodic sentence I wrote was this. I said, in the year 1437, the Aztec emissary to the great Ming composed a Nahuatl obad to the most beautiful of the court eunuchs. Now, why did I write that? I did this last week or the week before. I can't reconstruct. I was just putting together in my mind, little foreign words and phrases. And then I kind of Googled to make sure it worked. It doesn't work. It's fantastical. I don't think the Aztec Empire ever sent an ambassador to the Ming Dynasty. But the interesting thing about that sentence is that the Ming Dynasty is the successor dynasty to the Yuan Dynasty, of which Kublai Khan was the emperor. That was the reconquest of the Chinese empire by the ethnic Chinese and away from the Mongols. But if we go with this theory that Coleridge was going to write an epic poem about the Mongol Empire being the origin of the Aztec Empire, then in my fanciful sentence, I was imagining the Mongol Empire in its guise as the Aztec Empire returning to its site of origin in China, from which it had set off to begin with. And is there any meaning to that? Does that have any meaning? My fear is that the meaning of this synchronicity is about a prophecy of war, that the New World and China will soon be at war. That's what I fear this synchronicity means. And so I hope, in fact, that it's merely a coincidence. But my point is that I didn't, when I wrote that sentence, which I intended sheerly as a piece of literary mischief, I had no idea about this material, about Coleridge reading about the Aztecs and the Mongols, and that this was what that Kublai Khan had the potential to finally be about had he finished it. And so I end with this as a purely self-indulgent testing of the theory that the writer is channeling voices and visions that have some prophetic or Vedic capacity. And we're going to hear more about that theory next week when we turn to Percy Bysshe Shelley, because this will be his theory of the poet as Aeolian harp. So we're going to revisit these Coleridgean ideas in the second generation of romantics next week. In the meantime, this has been John Pistelli for the Invisible College. If you'd like to like, share, comment, and subscribe, please go to grandhotelabyss.substack.com. Please download the slideshow corresponding to this lecture there. Please share this. Please tell a friend. If anybody out there, even in real life, but if anybody out there on the internet as well is looking for something to listen to or something to read, I have serialized fiction. I have my serialized novel, Major Arcana. I have the odd intermittent book review, and I have my free to all weekly newsletter on literature and culture called Weekly Readings. So grandhotelabyss.substack.com. This is the Invisible College. I am your host / instructor, John Pistelli. Thank you so much for your patronage. Thank you so much for your time. Please join me here next week for a discussion of Shelley. And in the meantime, have a great day.